Hello and welcome to the OMFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. On this week's episode, we talk about gender diversity in central banks. This is Danai Kiriakopoulou, Chief Economist and Head of Research at OMFIF, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast today Ed Sibley, Deputy Governor for Prudential Regulation at the Central Bank of Ireland and also Chair of the Diversity and Inclusion Steering Group at the Central Bank. A very warm welcome to the podcast, Ed. So today we will be talking about gender diversity in central banks. And this is an issue that OMFIF has been covering for quite a while now. And for the past few years, we've also created an index, what we've called the Gender Balance Index, that tracks the presence of men and women in decision-making level positions at central banks globally. And we've created a database looking at all the different individuals at the very top level of central banks, including governor, deputy governor level, as well as the executive board and policy setting committees. And what we've tried to do is see which regions are doing well, what are the trends over time when it comes to women in central banking. And what we've seen this year in the report that we will be launching in March is that there's only 14 women central bank governors out of 173 central banks globally. And even if we include deputy governors, the number of central banks with women present at this very high level is only 63. And that includes, of course, the Central Bank of Ireland. So well done for this. But why do you think we're seeing such a lack of gender diversity at the top levels of central banking? It's even worse than what we see in politics or in the private sector, in parliaments, for example, or in finance. So what is going on with central banking?
It's clearly worrisome and problematic, the current situation. We're very focused on diversity in all its forms, not just gender, here at the Central Bank, recognising the challenges around the lack of diversity, the risks associated with that, and some of the issues you've outlined. So I think it is clearly a problem and needs to be looked at. I think there's at least now some degree of recognition, including through the work of your good self, that this does need to change. We can certainly see, I think most definitely in the advanced economies, a recognition that things do need to change. And I think there are potentially some structural factors in certain jurisdictions that make it more difficult for women to come through to the top. But I think that those reasons are less obvious, less justifiable in some of the advanced economies. So I think there's probably some underlying causes that we usefully discuss. There is probably some innate conservatism in central banking, and there is also potentially, in some areas, less so for us, a degree of stability or lack of turnover in certain central banks that mean that there isn't actually that the opportunities aren't arising to address the situation. So to my mind, I think one of the things that we do need to really think about is pipeline, talent, how we encourage a diverse mix of people to be working in central banking, and then how do we encourage them to progress through an organisation to the very senior levels. We are being inclusive in terms of the voices that we're hearing and those that are kind of getting opportunities to progress. But that obviously does take time.
Absolutely. I think the reasons you've outlined, the structural factors, it's important to understand what these are so that we can then address them through the policies and these priorities that you highlighted. But you said it's a worrisome and a problematic situation. Why does diversity matter in decision-making, level positions, in policy-making institutions such as central bank? Is it a factor that influences outcomes? Is it simply down to having the best people in terms of academic, professional qualifications, irrespective of diversity, or does diversity add something to it? What are the benefits of it? And do you think there is a difference when we think about diversity in the private sector, for example, that the central bank supervises versus the policy-making institutions themselves?
There's a lot in that, and much of what you've just said I would agree with. It matters, and our perspective. There's a high degree of research and increasing amount of research. Evidence is why diversity and inclusion, I think the inclusion point is important, matters. So if we think about some of the risks when we see lack of diversity around groupthink, around not challenging assumptions, around overconfidence in decision-making, excessive resistance to external challenge, poor decision-making, poor grasp of risk, all those issues which were large in terms of the causes of the financial crisis, and we've seen through subsequent issues coming through, particularly on the conduct side, post-financial crisis, all point to issues that are kind of relevant and related to a lack of diversity, lack of challenge at senior levels, kind of not really taking in different views. I think that's relevant from a private sector perspective. Certainly in Ireland, we've seen fairly chronic lack of diversity at senior levels in the financial services system, but equally it's relevant from a public sector perspective, a policy-making perspective, and perhaps even more important is that I think those that are working in the public sector and are committed to public service, representing the public interest, then it's important that they're also representative of the public that they serve. So when I look at the central bank and how we operate, I think it's really important that people of Ireland can relate to, and we're reflective of the people of Ireland more broadly, helps enhance trust in public institutions, I think. And so there's lots of very good reasons why diversity in all its forms matter from a central banking perspective, which is why, as I said, it's worrisome and problematic that we're not where we need to be.
Thank you. Absolutely. Trust is a very important currency for central banks and relating to the public. Thank you for outlining these reasons. And also many central banks and the Central Bank of Ireland, including, and congratulations for that, are taking the issue of diversity seriously. You have, as we mentioned in the introduction, a diversity and inclusion steering group. This is also a practice we're seeing in other central banks around the world. What are the initiatives that you've put in play through this steering group? And what have been the lessons that you've learned in terms of what has worked, what hasn't worked? Give us the timeline of some of these policies that you've implemented and what evidence you've seen.
Going back to your original question, just for a moment, I think while we kind of overall, we can see that we're not where we need to be across the central banking as a whole. There are examples where there are good practices and impactful initiatives taking place. And I think it's important that A, we all learn from that, and B, that we try and set an example. So if we look at the likes of the Riksbank, Bank of Croatia, Bank of Canada, and kind of initiatives at the Bank of England, just a few examples there, all kind of showing a degree of commitment and a degree of thinking and kind of strategic thinking and leadership in this area. In terms of the work of the central bank, I'd say it's been going on for a while. The diversity and inclusion steering committee has really only been set up in, I think, 3 years ago. And I think our journey started before that. So a little under 20 years ago, we had no females at our head of division level. So that's key leadership level. So we had none at that level or above.
Starting from a low base.
So a very low base. And now we've moved to a position where at that level, in and around 40% of our staff are women. At our ExCo, so the kind of very most senior level of the bank, we're at 40% women. At our board level, around a third. And when we've looked, we've voluntarily published a gender pay gap report. We're kind of less than 3% in terms of a gender pay gap. So that's all positive from a very low base and over a relatively short period of time. I mean, I think, to my mind, I think we need to continue to challenge ourselves to say, well, why are we only at 40? Why are we only at a third at the board level? And why is there a gender pay gap at all? So those things, I think, do need to continue to focus. But there's been lots of work done over a long period. And I think that probably started kind of with real momentum as we kind of initially emerged from the crisis. So kind of back a kind of decade or so ago, and an absolute acceptance and realization that we as an organization needed to change. And that has led to some kind of explicit thinking about diversity, including initiatives around gender diversity. But it's also some kind of implicit or kind of maybe even subconscious changes around kind of getting new people in and having a degree of turnover that allows us to kind of be very much focused on meritocracy. In terms of specific initiatives, so we did some work, I'd say, about 5 or 6 years ago, looking at where we were from a gender perspective and whether our HR practices were really supportive of women. Women would kind of continue to progress, having the kind of right approach to flexibility of working practices and the like. We've tried more recently to set out a kind of pretty ambitious plan for diversity and inclusion through steering that again looks at some of those practices that we have, including how do we think about promotions, how do we think about supporting parents, but also kind of much wider thinking around other aspects of diversity and making sure that people can bring that to help themselves to work. So kind of really trying to put in place a very inclusive culture.
Fantastic. And there are also various levels of these kind of policies that some legislators can implement. There is the maternity leave arrangements, the flexible working and so on, but also more controversial measures. There's the quotas or perhaps more mild, the aspirational targets that institutions can set. You mentioned the 40% rate of staff. Are there any targets that you're employing in that respect? What do you think are the more effective ways to ensure gender diversity?
So I think the targets are something that we're looking at. I think that they're, given where we are right now and the kind of slow rate of progress that we discussed around kind of central banking as a whole and that I would see in the financial services system that we regulate and supervise, I think that it does merit thinking about targets. I think if we are to go down that road, I think then we need to have a degree of ambition with them. But I think we also need to recognize the limitations of them and so that they don't become kind of be all and end all. So in terms of thinking about targets. We're certainly thinking about whether there's something we can do around promotions rather than necessarily having a kind of overall headline target at a particular levels. It does, targets do tend to focus on gender, and that's fine to an extent, but I think there is a kind of challenge, kind of how would you target increasing kind of diversity in all its forms. I think it also does tend to have some limitations. They do tend to have some limitations in terms of how effective they are kind of working that your way down through the organization and really kind of driving meaningful change. So where we've seen targets in the private sector, and Scandinavia would be an example of this, they're typically focused at the board level, and they can be impactful in terms of changing gender diversity at the board level. But it's much easier to parachute people into boards without necessarily investing in what's happening underneath. So as I kind of referred to, I think at the very, what I'm most interested in is how are we thinking about the pipeline of talent that comes through? Where do we get people dropping out or not progressing in a way that one might expect? Understanding the kind of root causes behind that. Are there things in the practices that we have, in the policies we have, or how they're implemented? Some things in the culture that are impacting. So yes, I think there is a kind of definitely a target to a live discussion point here in the bank, and I think can be considered more broadly. But I also think that they're not a panacea. They need to kind of be accompanied with other initiatives and other actions.
And there is a lot of ground to cover from what you've been saying, from where we are at now, before we can get to a point where we can expect to have these ambitious targets, as you were saying. But looking ahead to the future, women are increasingly better represented in the economics profession worldwide. We have more young student graduates and more at entry-level positions. So do you think it's only a question of time before we move towards equality as these cohorts become older and more senior? Or do we think there are more systemic factors at play that even though you can have greater diversity in the entry-level positions, this pyramid structure of women not being able to progress to the higher level will still persist? And also, as we look at central banks and how they're developing in the private sector, for example, we see more and more of the banks employing more tech staff than economists. This may be something that we may see in central banks going forward as well. I don't know what is the situation in the Central Bank of Ireland, but as issues such as digital currencies, digitalization of finance, cybersecurity become more important and more relevant for central banks. And that's, of course, another area and profession where we see women underrepresented. So these two issues, how do you see the progression issue? Is it systemic? Is it something that will change as the cohorts get older? And also these more structural changes with other areas where women have tended to be underrepresented, how will this impact diversity in the staffing of central banks going forward?
So I think one can be kind of glass half full or glass half empty about this. So I would see that I think from a glass half full perspective, I think there are grounds for optimism. As I've touched on, there's clearly a degree of momentum and good practice coming out and from a number of central banks. I'd hope to include ourselves in that. So that have shown that this is important and progress can be made in a constructive and safe way. And there's a kind of very clear benefit from it. And as you touched on, if we look beyond central banking, I can see some progress in other areas. We've done a lot of work thinking about diversity in the financial services system and have been increasingly intrusive in pushing firms to do something about the lack of diversity at senior levels in the financial services system. And we can start that the dial is turning a little. So I think there is a degree of momentum and things will move in a positive direction to the future. So that would be a kind of optimistic outlook. And looking at it slightly from the other direction, the pace of change is pretty slow. And so I think if we were just to say, well, it'll kind of sort itself out over time without kind of much intervention, I think we might be waiting a long time for that to happen and too long for it to happen. So I think it does require intervention rather than relying on some of those kind of natural forces that you describe to fix it. In terms of the other question around how central banking is changing and how the financial system is changing, then that's clearly true. And we do need to be recruiting and retaining and developing some different skill sets, as well as the more traditional ones, which we still need to recognize as important. I think the record in some of those areas, so what we've described as STEM, those kind of technology areas, I think the record is actually probably as poor as kind of historically economics has been. So we may get some enhancements in terms of kind of broader diversity of skills and experience. I don't think it necessarily means that we're going to get improvements in gender diversity as a result. But it is important that we are getting different voices into the central banking and different perspectives in a kind of broad way, as well as thinking about gender.
Thank you. Well, this was a fantastic conversation. We've learned so much about why central banking has a problem, what are the challenges and risks, what is the importance of diversity, what are the policies that central banks can put in place through their diversity and inclusion committees that some central banks have created, and also looking ahead to the future, what are the challenges for diversity and whether we can expect things to naturally progress in a way that supports diversity or whether intervention is required, as you suggested. So thank you very much for your time. I'm Ed Sibley, Deputy Governor for Prudential Regulation at the Central Bank of Ireland and also Chair of the Diversity and Inclusion Steering Group at the Central Bank of Ireland. Thank you also to all of our listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do leave us a review. Thank you very much.